This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 38 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 site credit when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I spent $40,000 on shoes.
What's the matter, Morty?
This thing.
Great gowns. Beautiful gowns.
Has changed.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to another episode of the Every Outfit podcast. Usually, Chelsea, we start with me asking how you're doing, but I feel like I should just speak to what's going on in my life right now.
Yes, you've had a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad week.
Yeah, I initially was going to discuss how this week has been a bit of a mixed bag. My car did get hit and run on the street yet again, but it was my birthday, and I had a lovely day co-hosting a joint birthday with my friend Kayla. A lot of friends and loved ones stopped by on Monday, which is my actual birthday. I had a lovely picnic with Paul. However, this morning, my dog passed away. Which sucks. And I don't mean to bring the podcast down, but I thought that there would be no better way to get my mind off of this incredibly sad passing than talking about dumb bullshit with my best friend.
I'm so sorry, honey. You know I've been through it. There's truly nothing worse. You know, it's a really specific kind of heartbreak, I think.
Yes, and we had to rush him to the emergency vet. He was attacked by a coyote. And the only emergency vet I could think of was the place that you brought your dog to when he passed away. So now this place has killed both of our dogs.
I mean, to be fair, lovely people. It's a great emergency vet. Don't love the fact that both of our pets died there, but it seems like they were going to die anyway, so.
Yeah, again, not to bring the podcast down, I do think that Frosty passed as we were heading to the emergency vet. So if I sound a little sad or off while we're speaking about Coachella, that is why.
Well, now our dogs can be together again. To be fair, your dog never liked my dog.
Your dog would sexually assault my dog. So I like to think that Quito is humping Frosty in doggy heaven right now.
I'm so glad we have all of those photos and videos now.
of Quito molesting Frosty over the years?
Yeah, exactly.
Guys, you know us. This is the energy we bring to sad events in our lives.
So let's pour one out for Frosty. I mean, I guess you can't really pour one out because you're pregnant, but...
Yeah, I'll pour this water that I have beside me.
I'm surprised that you still wanted to record this.
I could either sit in my home and cry and be super sad and then record with you tomorrow or Saturday.
Which I guess is still kind of sad because it's like the thing you postpone because of this death, you know?
Yeah, and like I said before, I think there's no better way to take my mind off of this than speaking about some dumb pop culture bullshit with you.
Yes, and we have a lot to talk about, but before we get into the episode, we have a correction to make. We made a big mistake on last week's episode, and we owe Anne Just Like That an apology.
Oh, my week just keeps getting worse and worse. What did we do now?
Those rats in the trailer were not CGI.
Excuse me?
They were real live rats. They even had their own rat handler, according to someone that commented on the Patreon.
Okay, we stand corrected.
Although, I don't know if I believe it. I think it might be a combination. I watched it again, and I could see how the first shots of the rats could be real rats, but then there's an overhead shot where those rats just look a little too perfect, you know? Those are some Ratatouille rats.
I think they probably had about a half a dozen rats, maybe even a dozen rats, and then they filled the rats out with CGI. I could definitely see Daddy MPK looking at the edit going, we need more rats. It's not funny enough.
So true. So anyway, we are sorry, and just like that.
And to the rat wrangler. I'm sure he was like, I work very hard. This is my 237th IMDb credit.
Imagine having that job.
People do, but I just thought that that went the way of squibs, where like in the world of CGI, we just don't do that anymore.
Well, I'm glad that And Just Like That is keeping this rat wrangler employed.
You had a much better week than I did, so maybe you want to tell the listeners what you have going on.
Yeah, I saw Isaac Mizrahi's cabaret show with my friend Queenie. It was so incredible. He performed at this theater I've never been to before called The Wallace, which is in Beverly Hills, very close to Rodeo Drive. And it brought out a truly magical crowd that I think was completely over 60. Like, we were definitely the youngest people there. And it was just all like old gay Jewish rich people in these incredible outfits.
Well, I like the sound of this.
Yeah, it was a lot of Chanel suits and like just very flamboyantly dressed guys. Like, I saw the real life Stanford Blatch and he was 80. Like, it was amazing.
Los Angeles is unlike any other metropolitan city, like a London or New York or even Chicago, where you're walking around on the street. You know, every day you could see someone incredibly stylish because everyone is in their cars here or in their homes. It's only very particular events where you see the actually stylish people in Los Angeles. Previously, I've said this is A Current Affair, the vintage show, but now I'm thinking it's Isaac Mizrahi at the Wallace.
It was a very, like, Upper West Side type of crowd that, yeah, I've never seen out in full force in Los Angeles before, certainly, but Isaac was so good. He sang a bunch of jazz standards with a six-piece band, told great stories about celebrities, admitted that he made out with Kevin Spacey, which I thought you would appreciate.
Oh, wow. See, I would have taken that to the grave.
Yeah, but I love the fact that he admitted it. He did a whole song about name dropping and it was really good. He did a cover of Liza with a Z and he sang My Baby Just Cares for Me and dedicated it to Timothée Chalamet because he also said that he shot a scene with him for that new Zafty Brothers film, Marty Supreme.
That makes sense. Marty Supreme is set in the 50s, and if anyone is 50s coded, it is Isaac Mizrahi.
So I went to the IMDb and was like, who else is in this film? And you know who else is in it? Sandra Bernhard and Fran Drescher.
Icons only.
Truly so good. And he's on a tour right now. This show is now coming to the East Coast. I know it's coming to DC. I know it's coming to New York to 54 Below. And I feel like everyone should go to that show because usually Isaac performs his cabaret act at the Carlisle, which is a very expensive experience, however fabulous. But if you want the budget version of that, see Isaac at 54 Below.
So Isaac Mizrahi has always been an inspiration to us and in what we do. I know especially in Los Angeles, we've been trying to find a live performance venue that doesn't make us want to kill ourselves. Should we be performing at the Wallace from now on?
I would love to, but I feel like that's the kind of stage we can't just book. Like, that's the sort of theater where you get season tickets to things, which is how all of these people ended up there, I think.
We're not exactly meant for the Ladies Who Lunch crowd.
I don't know if you've seen this on Instagram, but Isaac Mizrahi has started selling his old runway samples. I think the website is called Isaac Mizrahi Archive or something like that. And he's releasing new pieces every single month and then posting videos on Instagram that are kind of like explaining the history. And
I'm sorry, Isaac Mizrahi is Kardashian closeting
his own archive. I know. It is cool that he's doing it because it's cool that people can buy these like very rare pieces. But also I'm kind of like, shouldn't this be donated to the Met or something, or the Brooklyn Museum,
or even the FIT Museum?
Shout out to Valerie Steele. We stan.
At some point this year, because it is the 30th anniversary of his landmark documentary Unzipped, we will do it for the VIP channels, but other things have taken precedent.
He's truly just such a treasure and an inspiration. And that show totally made my week, I will say.
I have some more Los Angeles news, if you're open to hearing it.
I'm wide open.
In recent weeks, Chell, I have become something I like to call an ArcLight Hollywood truther.
Haven't you been an ArcLight Hollywood truther?
Well, yeah, those that have listened to the show for a while have heard of our love of the now defunct Hollywood location of the ArcLight, AKA the best movie theater ever. And don't at me about the Vista, okay, guys? I'm talking about the best multiplex. The last I spoke on this topic, I believe it was in 2023 when I gave news that Dercyon, is I think how you say it, who owns the ArcLight Hollywood, had renewed their liquor license and were eyeing a 2025 reopening for the theater. But we're not exactly halfway through 2025, but there's been no news of its reopening. In recent weeks, I've become obsessed with a Twitter account called Save ArcLight Cinemas, which revealed that in the 2 years since that report, which went everywhere, Deadline covered it, Variety, Hollywood Reporter, there has been no movement at ArcLight Hollywood. It has been left abandoned. And according to a Dercyon employee that this Twitter account, Save ArcLight Cinemas, spoke to, they have no plans to reopen it. And there have been many attempts for an outside buyer to purchase the theater, and the company has allegedly refused to sell it to anyone.
And the reason for this being that, what, they're getting some sort of tax break because they own it and it's making no money or something?
I don't know. For those that don't live in Los Angeles, the ArcLight is a multiplex cinema, but in front of it is the Cinerama Dome that I believe has historic preservation status. Because what I would think they're trying to do is sell the land for some mixed-use, terrible apartment-slash-retail building. The other ArcLight locations, other than the ArcLight Hollywood, have all been sold to other theaters. The ArcLight Sherman Oaks is now the Regal, but they're holding on to this location specifically. So what can we do, Chelsea? What act of civil disobedience can we do?
Well, I saw that there was a protest there that I didn't know about until afterwards, or I would have gone.
Well, there's another one. Friday, May 2nd at 1 p.m., there's going to be an assembly outside of the Dercyon HQ to convince them to reopen the ArcLight Hollywood or sell it to someone. And I don't want to hear Quentin Tarantino. I hate this online discourse where it's like, just have Quentin Tarantino buy it. Guys, he's bought 2 one-screen theaters. He cannot handle a 15-screen theater and the Cinerama Dome.
Well, you would think that the offers to purchase it would be coming from Netflix or something.
And Netflix has purchased their own historical theater. They purchased the Egyptian, which they are currently refurbishing. It is not reopened yet.
Well, ArcLight is also very close to the Netflix HQ.
The only streamer, it seems, that does not have a theater under their belt would be Apple.
Look, everyone has a price, so clearly no one's offered this evil company enough money yet.
I need some child of a billionaire to just purchase this multiplex.
are you talking about Megan Ellison per se? It is Lesbian Visibility Week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu. Yeah.
So, speaking of Lesbian Visibility Week, I don't know if you saw, but Kristen Stewart got married.
I know, at Casita del Campo. This is maybe the least annoying celebrity wedding I've ever heard of.
For those who don't live in Los Angeles, this is a Mexican restaurant in Silver Lake, Feliz Silver Lake border, that has been open forever. It has a bright pink building.
It's a historically gay restaurant. It was opened by a guy that played one of the sharks in West Side Story. Since the 60s, has been a place with a lot of gay customers, a lot of gay employees. You know, the kind of place where Rock Hudson hung out back in the day. It's very cool, and it's like such a cute place for them to get married.
Yes, yeah, so Kristen Stewart married her longtime love, Dylan Mayer. On 420 as well.
And from the paparazzi photos I saw, it's kind of like they just got dressed in clothes they had, probably.
It's paparazzi photos, but then People has the exclusive with, like, sources talking about the wedding. So clearly this was planted. No shade.
It's just nice to see someone that lives in Silver Lake actually get married in Silver Lake and not, like, the Amalfi Coast or something. If they're as wealthy as someone like Kristen Stewart is.
It's very cute.
Congrats to one of our preeminent lesbian couples. And the crazy thing is that I drove by Casita on Sunday because I was meeting Maya at Botanica, where I happened to see two other lesbians. Abby Jacobson was there, and so was the internet's favorite it girl, Gabby Windy.
You know that she's married to, you're watching this season of Hacks, right?
Not yet. I'm aware of her wife, of course, Robbie Hoffman.
Who is kind of the breakout star of this season of Hacks, in my opinion.
It's just such a cool and unexpected couple. I think they both make each other cooler. It's like the Aiden thing with the wood.
Two flawed lesbians.
They're not flawed. They're both perfect, but they're perfect in different ways.
I know. I was just trying to mix in what Aiden was talking about, the wood. Hyperion Avenue was popping off with the lesbians on Sunday afternoon.
Seriously. Anyway, shall we move on to Coachella?
Absolutely. Now that we've talked about all the things that were going on in Los Angeles during Coachella weekend,
it's time to head over to Indio.
Maybe this speaks to my age, but I'm kind of shocked that Coachella is still a thing.
Why?
I mean, from a commercial standpoint, I get it, but like that people are excited to go and it's still like a zeitgeisty thing, I'm a little surprised by.
I think it's just going to get more popular. It's going to be a whole month of performances soon.
Yeah, I guess I sort of thought that it jumped the shark when it expanded to two weekends. And especially when the live stream is so good. I should say, I do have a bias against live performances.
Yeah, you do.
The live stream that they do is so good that I can watch from my home. It's like, why would I want to be out thousands of dollars and get heatstroke being 7,000 people deep seeing Lady Gaga.
Also, it came out that like half the people that bought tickets used payment plans.
If this is not a recession indicator, I don't know what is. Yeah, Forbes reported that 60% of those who bought general admission tickets used a buy now, pay later service. To be fair, this payment plan, while you're paying interest, it's still less than putting it on a credit card. So I guess that's not terrible, but obviously Gen Alpha and Gen Z are unable to cash flow a GA ticket to Coachella.
Right. Yeah, I love watching it from home. There's not that many things that we all watch live these days. So I'm so appreciative when there is something like that. It feels exciting. I watched the Gaga performance the first weekend when I was in Greece, and it did feel a little bizarre to like be watching that at 9 a.m.
I really did feel like Miranda in All That Glitters, where you had texted me at what was 11 p.m. LA time, and you were like, Gaga's on stage, and you had a screenshot of your computer watching it, and I had fallen asleep.
Well, good thing you had the next weekend.
Are we calling this Gaga-chella?
Oh, shut up. No, I hate everything. I did like the show, though. Loved her performance. I thought she was great.
Hey, chill, did you know that she was actually singing live?
She did everything in her power to let us know that she was singing live by not cutting the mic between songs. And she was like, which normally, like, they would just mute that. But I think it was very intentional on her part to let people know that she wasn't lip syncing.
Absolutely. And I was watching the second weekend where she had a mic malfunction. And I saw this tweet that was like, yeah, what else did she expect performing Bloody Mary into Abracadabra into Judas on Easter weekend?
Yeah, the Abracadabra to Judas part was probably my favorite. That or the like perfect celebrity performance where she was like lying in the sand with the skeleton.
This is my question to you as someone who I'm sure is going to see this mayhem tour. The visuals for this Coachella performance were so complete, so tied to the Mayhem album, right? The vision of this live performance was continuing the idea from Abracadabra of the dueling Gagas, the dark Gaga and the light Gaga. But it's hard to imagine that this wouldn't be the creative direction of her upcoming live show or live tour.
What Alexander McQueen shows will she copy for that? And by her, I mean her creative directors. Because we got a couple McQueen references here. We got the chessboard show, and we got the part where she was like in a wind tunnel, essentially, with like the white chiffon spilling behind her.
Her performance of Poker Face was inspired by the spring-summer 2005 Alexander McQueen chess piece show.
Well, and have you seen those videos from Dua Lipa's tour? She's also copying old McQueen fashion shows. Like, she did the Ring of Fire one.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I loved this performance. I thought it showcased what Gaga does best. I think it was a really nice return to form after Chromatica Ball, which neither of us were particularly into.
I also thought what worked really successfully is she played the majority of her new album, and I think there's always that tension, especially when you play a festival like a Coachella, of do I play my greatest hits? I have a new album out. Do I play the new album? And I think she balanced the strengths of Mayhem with the songs you would expect her to play.
For sure. It was so satisfying seeing her do all the new songs, although we could have done without the Beast, frankly. Didn't need that.
The hooey-est section of this live performance was, right, because for those who didn't watch it, it's broken out into four or five acts. Act one of Violet and Vice, that was the Bloody Mary, Abracadabra, Judas section. Act two was And She Fell Into a Gothic Dream. Act three, The Beautiful Nightmare That Knows Her Name, where she played Killa, Zombie Boy, then Die With a Smile into How Bad Do You Want Me?
That was the most bizarre section, absolutely. And I think it could have done with about 80% less skeletons.
Well, I went back and looked at the Mayhem track listing. Those are kind of in chronological order. But I know you told me that Die With a Smile was a gigantic hit, but it is interesting, the Gaga songs that are just now part of her repertoire. Like, I guess it's clear that she will never not play The Shallow live. Like, she's like, this is my free bird. I must play it or the people will riot.
Well, it's also a Coachella song. So it would be psychotic of her to not perform it at Coachella. But I think that section was also really weird because of the costuming. She looked insane. Like, the wolf jumpsuit that she wore that was kind of asymmetric, it was Marnie somehow, although it did very much look like a bootleg Eras Tour Reputation type jumpsuit thing. And then it just got crazier and crazier. It's like she's wearing a feathered jester hat. She's wearing some sort of like military coat with like a bustle, and she's skipping down the runway singing that like faux Taylor Swift song, and I'm like, what is happening?
This performance, understandably so, is foreshadowing how this live tour is going to look, and it's like, okay, there's going to be a basic girl section of this performance where she plays How Bad Do You Want Me, which my only request is, can we get Grigio Girls or Pinot Grigio Girls, our favorite song, a B-side from Joanne?
Okay, that's not my favorite song. That's definitely your favorite song. Well, I think the basicness that you speak to, and don't get me wrong, I love How Bad You Want Me. I think it's a great song. But I think that a lot of the basicness was because of the wig choice in that section, which was a very blonde, sort of bouncy, basic girl kind of hair. See, I feel bad talking shit about the costumes and the hair because I feel like it shouldn't detract from the performance, but it just does for me. Or it's what keeps the performance from being like perfect.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't have perfection all of the time.
The best look, I think, was the fecal matter outfit, which she wore at the end during Bad Romance. The white feathered.
Oh, yeah.
Also a McQueen throwback kind of look. But yeah, I'm excited to go to the Mayhem Ball. Is that what it's called? Something. I don't know. I didn't think it was coming to Los Angeles because they didn't announce those dates. But I think they were just waiting until after Coachella.
Well, I look forward to your live report from the Mayhem Ball.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
What else? Did you watch any of Missy Elliott?
I did. I thought Missy Elliott's show was so incredible, and the stage direction, which was some sort of sci-fi 1950s UFO visuals that I looked it up. Per the Gaga thing, it's like, do you engineer a whole new show for a Coachella performance, or is this your tour show put on stage at Coachella? And Missy Elliott is currently on tour, and that is her stage setup.
Yeah, Charlie did a very similar show as well.
What did you think of Missy Elliott?
She's always amazing. You forget how many songs she actually has, although it's really sad watching the people in the crowd that like do not know the words to anything except the chorus of Get Your Freak On. Like, so disrespectful.
What I was seeing online was everyone speaking about how, quote, dead the crowd was. I guess this is going to sound ironic, me saying like, it's very disconcerting watching it at home. on a screen through the live stream, that all these people are watching these live acts perform from the screen of their cell phones, but put your goddamn phone down.
I know, it's sad. Wasn't into the costuming for this either. That feels rude because her stylist, June Ambrose, like, is one of the OG celebrity stylists for rappers and someone who quite literally created the hip-hop style that we know today. But I felt like it was a little outdated and Drag Race adjacent.
Right.
Like, Missy is someone, a rare celebrity that really has this sort of persona and the capacity to actually pull off quite avant-garde clothing. And I just want to see her in Rick Owens or something like that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It feels like a direction she would have gone in.
It just feels like it's from 2008.
I know this is an overused phrase, but recession indicator.
Okay, Charlie.
So...
Were you not into it?
No, it's not that I wasn't into it. I feel like this year's Coachella, because I paid more attention to it, there is this tension that I've always wondered about between weekend one and two that was shown in Charlie XCX's Coachella performances, which is the first weekend had a slew of guests, including Troye Sivan for Talk Talk, Lord for Girls So Confusing, Billie Eilish for Guess, and then the second weekend she had Addison Rae, which is cool, but I know that some people were disappointed. This is my point about the festival going on for two weekends with the same acts, is you couldn't help but be disappointed if you saw all of Charlie XCX Guess for the first weekend expecting the same thing and then doesn't happen.
Well, I don't think you could really expect the same thing. I think the dream scenario would be like she gets Ariana Grande to perform with her, but that didn't happen. I think it was as simple as those celebrities probably happened to be going to Coachella anyway. And because they're celebrities that didn't have scheduling conflicts, they're like, we're going to the first weekend, obviously, because who wouldn't want to?
I was gonna say, what do you think it's about, first weekend or second weekend?
It's definitely about the first weekend. Also, first weekend, better Apple Dance. Sorry.
You didn't like Bo and Yang? Wasn't he the second weekend?
I love Bo and Yang, but I don't think he rehearsed that Apple Dance. That Apple Dance was like if I was to do the Apple Dance. Although if I knew I was doing the Apple Dance at Coachella, I would spend a week preparing doing the Apple Dance.
Well, there goes our chances ever being on Las Culturistas, Chelsea.
No shade, just saying. If we're going to compare weekend one's Apple Dance to weekend two's.
So the other mini controversy, non-controversy of Charlie XCX's performance was that many were disappointed that she was not the headliner and Green Day was instead. Charlie further stoked the fires by posting a photo of herself wearing a Miss Should Be Headliner shirt during her after party after her first weekend performance, presumably when Green Day was on stage. Chell, I didn't know that Green Day fans had the time or the care to give a shit about this, but like I saw on the internet for like the next week people shitting on Charlie XCX. It's like Green Day is the hill that you want to die on. And according to this FOMOS subreddit post I found, the answer is yes. I will read you some choice comments now. As if anyone is going to be spinning brat even 6 months from now. Green Day is generational. Charlie will be forgotten in 10 years. Charlie has already been around for 10 years. She's delusional just like her fans. Ma'am, please, Green Day is legendary.
Okay, let me just say, I didn't give a shit about Green Day at the height of their popularity, which I lived through, and I definitely don't give a shit about them now. And even if you do give a shit about them, I think we can all agree that 2025 was not Green Day's year. Or 2024, I guess.
No, and as you pointed out, which is the other confounding thing about Coachella in recent years, Green Day wasn't even the headliner for that night either.
I know, they had the most prominent text on the poster, but the reality of the situation is that Travis Scott was the number one performer that night. They opened for Travis Scott, who is much more popular than them at this point.
Yeah, I don't know how many years they've been doing this. I first noticed it last year with No Doubt, where they have the headliners for the three nights, and then like at the bottom of the posters are like, and No Doubt, or this year was like, and Travis Scott. When? We're not sure.
Yeah, I just like can't imagine being a Green Day fan that would even like give a shit about any of this Charlie stuff. Also, they're kind of missing the central concept of Brat, which is being like this, you know? This is a bratty sort of thing to do. It doesn't mean we should take it so seriously.
Well, I also assume that the crowd must have been made up of people our age or older, but when they would show the crowd, they seemed very young, like younger than us. And I know that Green Day had a resurgence during American Idiot when I was in high school.
Oh, God.
But even then, I was like, we're still doing this? Because I believe they are coming off of an anniversary tour for the 20th anniversary of American Idiot.
You know what was horrible? When American Idiot was like a Broadway show.
Oh, God, I forgot that.
That was when Broadway just died. Or that set them back.
You know what I think started it, though? Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Yeah, that was around the same time.
Anything else we want to talk about in regards to Coachella?
I think I'm fine to move on.
I do want to bring up just one last thing with you, which is the style of Coachella. Nothing has evolved in a decade.
Well, it's gotten less boho.
You are correct. There are no more flower crowns, but it's really belt focused. Like, it's Burning Man light is the style I've noticed.
Yeah, Burning Man has definitely influenced it, but I still think that the blueprint for the sort of statement belt slash micro short look that has become so ubiquitous at Coachella is those photos of Kate Moss at Glastonbury in the early 2000s. That really defined what festival style was going to look like in some capacity for the next 25 years.
But I do think it's interesting that the celebrities who maybe define this Coachella style, who still go to the festival, have very much, I think, seen stylistically what they sewed, and now that's why they purposely just dress very normal. I don't know if you saw Kendall and Kylie, but you could not tell the difference of them leaving Sushi Park or leaving the artist tent at Coachella.
Well, it's become deeply uncool to pull a look in the way that people used to. And we're now seeing a reaction to that. I think Lorde's outfit during Charlie's Coachella act was also kind of indicative of that. It was very dressed down, very little fashion, very quote-unquote normal, which it seems like that's the look that she's bringing to her new album and her new era, which is cool. I feel like because celebrity style has become super manufactured, but also just very expensive looking. Everyone is wearing head-to-toe designer, and that's kind of how it is. I feel like there's tremendous opportunity for someone to create a look that's kind of exists in opposition to that. And also, Lorde, just ever since Royals, has always kind of been like an anti-capitalist queen in some respects. It makes sense that she would maybe want to reject the conventions of celebrity fashion as well.
It's hard to see her in a flower crown.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Also, I want to talk about Addison Rae, who, like you said, performed with Charlie. She also performed with Arca. For the Arca performance, she wore a Chloe dress with like hot pink underwear, no bra, looked incredible. For Charlie, she wore this like really bonkers pink polka dot Miss Claire Sullivan ensemble that was also like a collaboration with Victoria's Secret Pink.
Oh, interesting.
Looked very cool. But I think to bring it back to what I was just saying about Lorde, I think the way she dresses is really interesting. Again, because it doesn't feel as manufactured. It doesn't feel like the pieces match each other necessarily. She's wearing Chloe, but she doesn't look like one of those insane Chloe brand ambassadors, like in the way that most celebrities look when they wear Chloe, because I think they have a full look policy. So I suspect that this dress was bought off the rack.
Which also makes it very cool. And the times we've talked about Carrie Bradshaw and her style and what makes it so cool is what Addison Rae is employing, which is a mixture of pieces. There's an unfussiness to it. I know that has been interpreted as actually she and her team are putting a lot of effort for her to look this unmanufactured, which I don't necessarily agree with.
I think it's a combination. There's a real opportunity for someone to differentiate themselves by not looking so matchy and contrived all the time. And also, I don't know if you saw Addison Rae's new music video, the headphones on one.
I did.
A very Carrie Bradshaw-coded song. But the video was so good. The styling in the video was so good. Again, if it was designer, it didn't look designer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the video perfectly captures what putting one's headphones on feels like, which is it feels like riding a horse on a black volcanic beach braless.
I just would have never thought that Addison Rae would be a musical artist that I care about, but here we are. Whatever she's doing is definitely working on me.
Well, we should say one thing we didn't mention actually with the Charlie XCX show is that she ended her second weekend performance by answering the question, where does Brat Summer go from here? And then the screen filled with her shouting out various artists that she loved. My personal favorite was Lorde Summer, Haim Summer, Turnstile Summer, Cronenberg Summer, PTA Summer, Aronofsky Summer. And she ended with a title card saying, you can't dread the end when it's over, Brat.
See, I'm looking forward to the Ari Aster Summer personally. That's the most demonic kind of summer that we could possibly be having. And you know what was missing, Lauren? And just like that summer.
Ooh.
That's the summer that we're about to have, let's be real.
And also Celine Song Summer. That was another good title card.
Well, it was also genius because all of these artists reposted the stills of the performance. It just like disseminates her throughout the internet even further.
So take that, Green Day.
It's not Green Day summer. That much I know.
Green Day, go back and do a second version of Bill Maher's Real Time theme song.
Time for some Liza Minnelli news.
I've been waiting this entire episode, Chelsea.
Okay, don't be a bitch. I know that I obviously put this in the doc and not you. But still, put some respect on Liza Minnelli's name.
And now, having watched her documentary, I have a newfound respect for Liza Minnelli, and it made me realize I did not know a ton about her.
I can't say the same.
That I know.
So the documentary that just came out about her is called Liza, A Truly Terrific, Absolutely True Story. Was it ever in theaters? I know it aired on PBS.
That's where I watched it.
I rented it from Amazon or whatever, Apple TV. As someone that loves Liza, this was a really entertaining watch for me, although I have thoughts.
Okay.
I'm curious to know what your thoughts are, though.
I was intrigued of how the documentary was structured. I do like that we are in this era where culturally significant people are submitting to documentaries before they pass on. This is an aside. I don't know if you saw the trailer for the Paul Rubens documentary.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It gives the impression that he sat down for this documentary before he sadly passed away from cancer, and the documentary continues afterwards. I was on the verge of tears watching this trailer, so I know I'm going to be torn up when I actually watch it.
Oh, of course. And it was also directed by Matt Wolff, who's a literal genius documentarian with the highest taste level. So it's going to be incredible.
But going back to the Liza Minnelli documentary, I'm glad she sat down for this. But obviously, because she participated in it, I imagine there were certain no-go areas that were, at least in my opinion, glossed over during the documentary.
Half her life was glossed over. We didn't even really hear about her childhood, which I think is pretty unusual for a documentary. They devoted maybe 15 minutes tops to her marriages.
The documentary begins with the death of her mother and Liza finding her own voice. But I found it interesting that only a third of the way in the documentary, they were like, she's basically J-Lo before J-Lo. Like, she is a love and sex addict. Here are all of her relationships. Now she's making cabaret. Like, they just immediately dump into another part of her life.
Well, yeah, they didn't really get into anything in a deep way that was super painful. And I understand that. I do not want someone to sit there asking Liza Minnelli probing questions about all of the upsetting things that have happened to her and all of the things that she's lived through. So I understand that, and I'm glad that she wasn't probed in that way. That said, obviously, that impacts the quality of the movie.
However, I don't know how much she needs to say about, let's say, her marriage to David Guest when you have one of her oldest besties, Mia Farrow. You just see it on Mia Farrow's face where she's like, ugh, that guy.
It's so funny because Mia Farrow has been working for a really long time, been on camera for what feels like ever. But you would think she had zero media training based on the things that she says in this movie, which are so real and so delightful.
You also forget how extraordinary Mia Farrow's life is. And you only realize it in moments where she's like, well, yeah, Frank used to say about Liza, and you're like, oh, right, because you were married to Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, and she gives us the origin of her and Liza's friendship, which was that they met as teenagers on a shoot for 17 magazine and have been friends ever since then, although they did also go to the same preschool, which is just crazy.
Hollywood madness. It wasn't Mia Farrow, it was another friend of Liza Minnelli, just wrapping up the whole David Guest of it all, where he's quoting Bette Davis, and he goes, you know, David Guest is dead now, and Bette Davis always said, never speak ill of the dead. And he goes, well, David Guest is dead. Good.
Yeah, I think that was Michael Feinstein who said that. Her other friends said that David Guest stole every piece of furniture and art in their apartment and moved out of the apartment while she was on tour and left behind a single bed and a single lamp. Sociopathic. Also, as many times as I've seen the photos of the Liza Minnelli and David Guest wedding, I forget how horrific the video footage of the kiss actually was.
It does give, to me, an infamous TLC clip from a show about people who were virgins who got married. Or do you remember this clip?
Was it the Duggars?
It wasn't the Duggars. It was a different documentary clip where it's giving the same energy of this man that clearly has never kissed a woman before. That's the thing, is like David Guest is trying to go for a French kiss. Like, he's going for expert-level kissing.
I don't even know what that was. He was eating her face. It was so over the top, it was like out of a Sex and the City episode. It was like that episode where Charlotte dated the bad kisser.
I had no idea she was engaged to Desi Arnaz and Peter Sellers.
Our girl got around. Well, what I will say is that I think this documentary did a really good job of explaining how Liza's persona, look, and sound was built, because she's already sort of coming into this world as the ultimate nepo baby, right? Vincent Minnelli is her father, Judy Garland is her mother, but then she's kind of immediately mentored by all of these icons at a relatively young age, like Kay Thompson, who basically became her default mother in her early 20s after her mom passed away. You might know Kay as the author of Eloise or the fake Diana Vreeland in Funny Face that does the Think Pink song. Such an icon. But you can see how Liza sort of took things from Kay, took things from Fred Ebb, who wrote a lot of her songs, wrote the music for Cabaret, and of course the style from Halston.
Yeah, I think a function of telling the documentary out of order, telling Liza's story out of order, is to show, and it is stunning when you think about it, her mother dies in 69, and throughout the decade of the 70s, Liza Minnelli's persona is established. She becomes an EGOT winner. She wins an Oscar for Cabaret and an Emmy for Liza with a Z within the same year. And then they get into the impact that her mother had, good and bad, on her ability and inability to kind of define herself outside of this. And really, for all that she accomplished in this short period of time of the 70s, how the media really wouldn't let it go that she was Judy Garland's daughter. Like, there's that clip of someone's asking her something about her mother, and she responds back, like, what do you think your mother's wish for you would be? Or something like that. And she goes, I wish to never be asked about Judy Garland again.
Of course. And then when she has her struggles with addiction, people are like, oh, so you're following in your mother's footsteps. Horrible. The things that journalists have said to this woman. Also, there's footage of journalists being like, so you're ugly. How do you feel about that? Which is insane to me because it never occurred to me that anyone could think that Liza Minnelli is ugly, just growing up, sort of idolizing her as a fashion icon and whatnot. It's just insane to me.
No one has insulted Liza Minnelli more, and I think about this at least once a year, than Ellen DeGeneres when she hosted the Oscars, saying that Liza Minnelli, who was sitting in the audience, looked like the best Liza Minnelli drag impersonator.
So fucking rude.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Oh, I also failed to mention Bob Fosse as another person that sort of helped her become who she is. I think it's really fascinating the way that they talk about, like, Bob Fosse, Fred Ebb, Halston. They all in some capacity, like, sort of took the imperfect things about Liza and either polished them or sort of amplified them. Like when they talk about the fact that she had scoliosis, so she was always sort of self-conscious because she was always kind of a little tilted, and how they sort of offset that with clothes and a certain type of choreography, and also how they sort of embrace the inherent awkwardness of her being Judy Garland's daughter and everything that came along with that when crafting her sort of self-deprecating onstage persona.
Absolutely. And this documentary is nearly 2 hours long, but I feel like it could have been 6 hours. It could have been like that Jane in Five Parts documentary.
It should have been.
Liza Minnelli, younger than I thought she was as well.
Well, she's in her late 70s, but she's had a lot of health problems, which is not something that is addressed in this documentary either.
She has tremors from viral encephalitis, and obviously dancing that hard for that many decades has been extremely hard on her body.
She was on Drag Race this week.
I watched.
I just sobbed the second I saw her. I mean, and not because it's like she looks bad. She's aged, obviously, whatever. But just because of how meaningful that moment was and how cool it was that she came. And at this point in her life, She should be sitting in her mansion underneath a cashmere throw, drinking a hot tea. She shouldn't be in glam, going out, doing things like Drag Race. But the fact that she still does and still shows up for the gay community in such an extreme way is just really generous of her.
I actually think that Liza should be nowhere else but being feted by drag queens and given a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Okay, but also the position that she was in the throne, when they introduced her with her leg just kind of over the side, was so incredible. I thought they were going to subject her to like a whole Liza Minnelli drag performance. It's nice that they didn't, but kind of sad that they didn't also.
The way that you feel about Real Housewives is the way that I feel about Drag Race, where too many seasons have gone by. I'm scared to start from the beginning. I don't exactly know where to jump in if a new season starts. And so I just don't participate in Drag Race.
Well, for me, I think I watched the first like 6-7 seasons back in the day. And then I fell off. And yes, now I'm too intimidated to rejoin. Although I do watch a few episodes here and there. I saw a few episodes from this past season. And what is really wild to me is the fact that now the people on Drag Race all grew up watching Drag Race, which was obviously never the case before.
Right.
But that was just so special, watching her with RuPaul.
Absolutely. I wasn't exactly sure she knew where she was, but I'm glad she was there.
She knew where she was. The one time I saw her perform was maybe, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago. She performed with Alan Cumming at Town Hall in New York.
Oh, wow.
The friend that I was with was friends with Alan Cumming, so we went backstage to say hi to him and walked past Liza's dressing room, and I saw that the door was a little bit ajar, whatever. I peeked in. She was like face down on a couch. This performance had taken every ounce of strength that she had to get on that stage and do what she did for that audience that loves her so much. And I just, it made me sad, but also it just made me realize how this has been hard for her for a really long time.
Absolutely. And for those who haven't watched the documentary and are wondering, while she doesn't talk about her cameo in Sex and the City 2, there is a shot of her dancing at Anthony and Stanford's wedding in a clip package towards the end of the documentary.
And the words Sex and the City appear on the screen briefly.
All right, Chell, should we get into some fashion news?
Sure.
Because the universe hates us. Of course, the news that Jonathan Anderson was going over to Dior Men's drop like right after we recorded.
No one's surprised by this.
No one's surprised that he's at Dior. The surprise is that the announcement is that he is designing menswear, because one of the worst kept secrets is he's definitely designing women's wear.
Yeah, I've heard that there's some Maria Grazia drama behind the scenes, and I can't help but imagine that I'm not fucking leaving scene from Wolf of Wall Street. But I don't think this announcement means that he left Loewe just to do Dior Men's. He's obviously going to do women's also. It just can't be announced now for whatever reason.
And it seems the only reason they are announcing this now is because he will be presenting his first show, which is menswear, June 27th. I like that the New York Times noted this was revealed in a, quote, terse one-sentence statement.
Yeah, I just don't believe that he would have left Loewe, where he had complete creative control of like every arm of that business, to then go to Dior, where he would only really control men's ready to wear. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
No, he's at a level where he would be the creative director, artistic director of everything, and the way that Demna is going to be at Gucci.
And this is great. They need help. I mean, I like Kim Jones. He's been the best thing about Dior in recent years, and particularly his last show was really, really good, but I think we're just ready for something new generally. I think we're ready for Dior to be a leader in fashion because of the actual clothes and not because the brand itself is larger than life. In other news, Jared Lantink is the new creative director of Gautier. Very exciting. The guest designer thing that they've been doing has been interesting to watch, certainly, because there's so many Gautier-isms, and it's fascinating to see what designers latch on to what aspect of that brand. But at the same time, I do think it's hindered them in a lot of ways.
Well, they haven't shown a ready-to-wear collection in over a decade. So he will be designing that and also taking over couture.
They've done a really good job of just making affordable pieces that people want to buy that don't get fashion shows in this weird, like, interim period. But I think the smartest move for any brand is just to hire one good, competent person to do their job, you know?
And for those who are not aware of this designer, we did talk about him with Patrick during our Fashion Month show. He's the designer who, during his latest collection, had a male model wearing a gigantic prosthetic breast on the runway.
And whoever has this job, you know, needs to have that, like, enfant terrible vibe, and he very much does.
Well, it's funny that you say that, Chelsea, because that's what the man himself, Jean-Paul Gaultier, said. He said, "I see in him the energy, audacity, and playful spirit through fashion that I had at the beginning of my own journey, the new enfant terrible of fashion."
Good for him.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this year in fashion, right? Jonathan Anderson will be debuting menswear in June. This new vision for Gaultier is coming in September. Haute couture not far behind, January 2026. I don't know if you saw, but there was some article that we'll get the first, quote, taste of Demna's vision for Gucci in September, whatever that means.
We have Chanel, of course. Whatever's going to happen with Bottega. And not whatever's going to happen. Louise Trotter has that job, but we will see her collection.
We can never predict it, but a few times a year, Phoebe Philo sort of drops a new collection.
Okay, although I think she's changed the way she's talking about the collections, because before it was like deliveries and edits.
Yes.
And now I'm on her website, and it seems like her past collections are described as A, B, and C.
It's a little confusing, I will agree with you, because yes, a little while ago, she dropped a lookbook for the Autumn Collection C, which will be delivered from June until November. But if you go on Phoebe Philo's Instagram, recently she's been like, here are a few more summer looks.
We haven't really talked about this brand since it launched. And that's not because I haven't been paying attention or don't love it. I do. I think it's amazing. I'm jealous of every single person that is wearing it and buying it. I feel like I wouldn't have problems if I had like a coat, a couple blazers, a couple of cocktail dresses, and like a few pairs of shoes.
Yes, but it's like, do you want to pay for a down payment of a home, or do you want to have a capsule collection from Phoebe Philo?
I feel like if you have the coin, it's your duty to buy these clothes.
Absolutely. And I think what's so interesting about Phoebe Philo being back in the fashion game is she is the originator of this look, whatever you want to call it, this sartorial epoch that we are currently in. She originated at her time at Celine and has been carried on by The Row, Kate, Totem. But it's interesting for her to launch a brand at this time because it is such a predominant style. It does exist at every single price point at this point.
But none of those designers that you mentioned are as good as her, straight up. And the look that they're doing is this sort of like contemporary minimal thing, but sort of without the aspects of Phoebe Philo's design ethos that are more fun. Like, I think that people think of her as this hardcore minimalist, when in reality, if you're looking at this summer collection, we have faux fur shoes. We have bamboo sunglasses. She's sort of brought back the brushstroke pieces, which she was also doing at Celine, that I wouldn't describe that as minimal necessarily.
Lauren Sherman, in a recent Puck article, described Philo as a, quote, sexual extrovert. And I do agree, there is something
perverse.
Yeah, it's not sexual in a Versace sense, but I think that is the kind of edginess that she brings to her work that separates her from, say, The Row.
Oh, for sure. Because she's made leather studded hot pants for this label. But I also think that she's maybe less of a minimalist and more of a pragmatist. Like, for the most part, she's designing clothes that are very functional, wearable. If you're an affluent person, this is where you should buy a blazer or a pair of khakis or whatever it is.
And the fact that she's not participating in the traditional fashion schedule, I do think is her way of fighting against the hyper-consumerism that she's seen over her time at various fashion labels.
Because it's just sold through her website and like a handful of brick and mortar stores. It feels very removed and sort of hard to get close to. Like, it's hard to physically see the clothes. And I live in LA where I can go to Maxfield and see them. But you go to Maxfield and it's like they have three things. You go to Bergdorf's and they have five bags. And there feels like there's a big gulf. And I don't see a ton of people wearing it, I think, because it's so expensive. I see some of the bags. And to me, a Phoebe Philo bag, more than anything, conveys status right now. Because the bags are so new, they don't really exist on the resale market at all. There's no cheap way to buy into that. And because other bags, Chanel, Gucci, Hermes, are so common in comparison.
So should we timeshare a Phoebe Philo bag? They are gorgeous. Good for her.
Yeah, if anything, I'm more into the clothes. Like, I feel like the highlight of the last collection is that insane car coat with, like, the huge shoulder pads. The shoulder that she's doing is really crazy. And that's the other thing, because brands can emulate her, but they're still kind of emulating what she was doing years ago. They're not doing the new things. They're not bringing the new silhouettes that she's bringing.
Yeah, I was particularly taken with the t-shirt that has a long train attached to it.
Gorgeous. And also works on all kinds of people, all kinds of ages. I would love a $1,200 Phoebe Philo t-shirt. I feel like you could get married in it, though, if you were Kristen Stewart at Casita.
It's only a matter of time.
I do like that she's bringing back a lot of Celine-isms, using blankets as accessories. The bamboo sunglasses that I mentioned, very close to that shape of those classic Celine sunglasses. I forget what they were called, but they were very, very popular like 10 years ago. The jewelry, though, the extent that every brand is knocking off Elsa Peretti now is actually shocking. Between this and Bottega Veneta, which are both doing iterations of the teardrop necklace and earrings.
Yeah, I was particularly taken with the fringe cuff.
This is why Phoebe is ahead. No one would dare to bring back a leather wrist cuff. I associate it with my youth.
I mean, but she has also made the chicest version of it.
Of course. But still, she's bringing back something that has been considered to be ugly and outdated for a really, really long time now. For good reason.
She has impeccable instincts.
Yeah, if anyone's getting us to wear leather wrist cuffs again, it's this bitch.
So we will continue to watch her label from afar.
Pining for it like Carrie pressing her face up to the Barney's window.
All right, I think we've said it all, Chelsea.
Yeah, we have. I think you have some mourning to do.
I need to pick the vessel that my dog's ashes will be put in.
Oh, God. Well, I have some recommendations.
I know you do. Do you think I should go for the bamboo paw print that was offered?
I did opt into that, but whatever feels right for you.
Well, this has truly been the highlight of my day. I need to stare blankly at a wall for a few hours, and I'll be back next week.
Praying for you, girl. Love you.
All right, guys. We will be back next week. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details. Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get select style selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.